So, thanks for taking time to talk to me today. Maybe you could start by telling a little bit about your diseases and conditions. You had MS and Crohn's disease. Why don't you talk about that? How old were you? The severity, etc.
I was paralyzed with multiple sclerosis when I was 40 years old in 1989. I'll be 62 this year. And the dental work that caused this had been happening back right back to the 1950s. I remember my dentist in Montreal. He would have the amalgam, in the palm of his hand, and he'd be rolling it around there with it, before putting it in my mouth. So as a kid, I started to get so-called silver amalgam fillings that are 50% mercury. Of course, that's the big dental lie that I write about on my site, and that's the basis of the lawsuit that Moms Against Mercury won against the FDA in 2008, which they conveniently reversed in 2009. This is related to poisoning from dental mercury. What's happening is that mercury crosses the placenta. It's in the fetus. It's in breast milk. And so when you have children who are mysteriously ill with things like ADD and autism, there are people who are discovering that the mystery is not so mysterious, because the attempt to cover up the cause is falling by the wayside, and there is a lot of information now being produced on the internet to show that when mothers start to chelate the mercury and other, possibly other heavy metals in their children, that recovery is possible and happens. And so the lawsuit to Charlie Brown, who was the lawyer, launched the lawsuit. They won, and then it was reversed.
So when you say you were paralyzed, you're like, MS is a progressive disease, is it not?
No.
In your case,
no. There are different. MS is can manifest itself in different forms, and the people who get caught up in, I have progressive this, or I have this kind of MS. This to me is irrelevant. What happened to me is that I was paralyzed rather quickly. The cup runneth over. In other words, I had 14 mercury fillings in my mouth, and I was on a dental plan working. I was in the health food business at the time. I was a manager of a large health food company, and I had some awareness, but of course not the awareness that I needed in order to avoid the problem that that happened to me. I went to the dentist, and he said, "Well, you've got some old cracked fillings, and I see you're on a dental plan, and we can replace them and put some new fillings in your mouth, and while we're at it, we can do your whole mouth." Well, he saw dollar signs in his eyes, and I said, but what about this mercury issue? I didn't know the fillings were 50% mercury, but I knew there was mercury in them. And this is the big cover with Moms from Moms Against Mercury, the lawsuit I was referring to, and Charlie Brown comments on it that they're called silver amalgam fillings in order to cover up the fact that they're mercury fillings. So if there was any other, that's the only product that is available in the Western world that is exempt from labeling laws, you can call it something other than it is, and it's no surprise that it's mercury. So what happened was, my dentist, I said to him, "What about the mercury?" And he said, "Well, if that was a problem, I wouldn't be using it." And I said, "Oh, well, that sounds all right to me then. Here's a dentist who's been in business for how many decades." So I was naive, and I put my myself in his hands with confidence. And after the dental work, went on vacation, and felt like I had been hit by a freight train. And within a matter of it wasn't more than 2 or 3 months, I started to really be in big trouble. I was working, got a job for as a general manager of a health food distributing company, and I was quite athletic at the time. I used a bike to work in the winter, and I had to stop biking and take the streetcar down Dundas Street, and eventually I couldn't walk to the stop, and came home and got into bed, and that was the end of it. I couldn't walk.
So this was in Toronto then?
Yep. November 1989.
So you went home and you went to bed, and when you say you were paralyzed, you didn't have the use of your hands, or?
No, I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't feel my legs. I had no feeling at all. They were just like dead lead posts. They were, I couldn't use, my hands were like in they would go into like a claw, you know. There would be like a reflex thing, and they would go into claws, and I couldn't hold, I couldn't feel anything. I would try to hold a plate, and I would drop the plate. I couldn't feel it. I went for testing, and part of the testing, you know, involved sensory thing. The doctor, you know, closed the lights, and he gave me something to feel, and I was trying to feel what it was in my hand, and I said, well, I don't know what it is. All I know is that it's square, I said, and he opened the light, and it was a 25-cent coin.
Wow. So how did you begin your road to recovery? How long is it before you could begin your road to recovery? Did your MS go into remission a little bit?
I don't believe in remission. It took me nearly 7 years to recover. I don't believe in all of the terminology that the medical profession surrounds MS with. I don't believe in the I've written enough about the MS clinics and the MS Society on my site. I gave a speech to the MS Society in 1997 in Vancouver and vilified them. Which they deserved, and they still deserve, because they profit off of people with MS. Mm-hmm. They're not there to help find the cause and the cure, as they say. They're there to run and bike and collect money and keep themselves in business. So it took me a long time to start to get mobile. My brother was getting married in December, and he said, Kenny, I'm getting married. Do you come to the wedding? I said, Lou, can't get out of bed. He says, what? I said, I don't know. I'm real sick. So eventually, in early 1990, I started to tell my legs. I said, damn it, I need you. You know, you better start moving. So I used my mind. I didn't know about positive affirmations and visualization. I'd never read any books on this or anything, but these were the only things that I had in my arsenal, because I couldn't function. So basically, I started to imagine myself well, and I started to tell myself, talk to myself and see myself as healthy, and talk myself into a very positive space, where I said, you know, I need to get to the library and find out what I've got. I need to get to a doctor and find out what's going on here. So anyway, I went to, it's a much longer story. I went to many practitioners, and I got taken for, alternate practitioners, as well as medical practitioners who were very willing to take my money. And eventually I got to a doctor at Mount Sinai Hospital and got MRIs done at Toronto General Hospital, and it showed what they call lesions, on the left side of the brain, and two very large ones on the spinal cord. And very quickly he said, well, you have multiple sclerosis. And I said, what? I was devastated. And he said to me, come back in 5 years, we'll see what the story is in 5 years. So I said to myself, well, thank you very much. That was very kind of you. So I, you know, I was in a funk for a while, and then I could see that the medical profession was, you know, I mean, totally bankrupt. MS Society totally bankrupt. MS Clinics totally bankrupt. Not financially. They're living off of sick people, but they weren't helping anybody. So I said, well, I got to do it myself. I got to find out what the hell it is. So I did a lot of research, a lot of reading. I was just forcing myself to get to the library. Eventually, I got to the medical library, read medical literature, and I just came to the conclusion that you know, it had to be the mercury fillings. But the story is a lot more complicated and a lot longer than that, because as I was starting to, I mean, put it this way, you know, I tried to become mobile and to get energy to function. One day I was feeling well. This was early in the 1990s before I got Crohn's disease. And I went out and took a walk and was feeling good. And I came back and I went to bed for 3 weeks, couldn't get out of bed. So this is the kind of thing I was up against. So I said, well, I mean, you know, you can feel good on any given day, but it ain't going to help you if you got to go back to bed for 3 weeks. You know, you're not, you know, you haven't made any progress. So eventually what happened was along the road to a lot of dead ends with alternative medicine, homeopathy, naturopathy, all kinds of energy healers, qigong, you name it, I did it. From one thing to the next. And then in the summer of 1993, I started to really get sick. I started to run a fever and have really terrible abdominal pain. And ended up moving to Vancouver in the fall of 93, and collapsed, and ran a fever, and this was for let's see, it was from the summer. That's August, September, November, December, January, February, March. I would the fever ran probably 8 to 9 months every day before I was operated on, and I was down to I'm 5'10". I was down to 52 kilos, about 114 pounds.
Wow!
So I was dying back in the spring of 94, and arrived in Vancouver, didn't know anybody, went around the corner, and this is in my recovery protocol, and I have a book also that full length hardcover, well, hard copy book that Huldah Clark's publishing company has agreed to publish, and I've been working on that for a long time, but I have so much work to do that it's been very difficult for me to complete it. I've completed large sections of it. In my recovery protocol, I describe a lot of what I went through when I went to Vancouver to try to connect with somebody who could, you know, who would help me. And so eventually I got to a general practitioner who got me to a gastroenterologist. And of course, they could see that I was in pretty rough shape, and got me into hospital. Dr. Ken Atkinson, he saved my life. April 5, 1994, he operated on me. And apparently they say that if my heart hadn't been strong, it wouldn't have survived the operation. I remember the first time he came to visit me in the in my room after my operation. He was at the foot of the bed, and he said to me, "Ken," he said, "you were a mess." Well, I had a feeling it was. I had tubes coming out everywhere. I had a fistula that went through the pelvic wall. It went through the pelvic bone, the pelvic wall, and was coming out the right buttock. I was addicted to morphine. I was addicted to morphine before. I was on the morphine machine. I spent 6 weeks in St. Paul's. And I had to have a second admission. I was hemorrhaging. They you know, they like to get you out of the hospital to make, you know, make some money and get somebody a fresh body into the bed, you know. So what happened was they let me out of there prematurely, and I knew it was prematurely because went back to the apartment, collapsed on the floor, and so my wife says, well, better call a hospital. I said, no. I said, 911. So I called 911, and they scraped me off the floor, put me on the stretcher, got me back in the ambulance down at St. Paul's, and it took my hemoglobin count, and it was 41, which means that virtually I had, you know, there's a reserve of blood in your body, in your liver. You know, when you lose all your blood. See, I was hemorrhaging. They were giving me transfusions, but I was hemorrhaging, you know, every time I went to the bathroom. So all the blood was coming, going into me, was going out of me. And they let me out, I think, with about an 80 hemoglobin count. And I was 41 when I came back in the hospital. So I had virtually very little blood left in my body. But, you know, and they were surprised. I wasn't in shock. But my lips were still moving, and I was still conscious, because that's kind of the way... everybody in my family, you know, was like that. You know, we were fighters, and the lips always kept moving, you know. what happened was, he kept transfusing me, kept bleeding, and a doctor came into my room, and he said, well, you know, if you don't stop bleeding, we're going to have to open you up again in the morning. I had 29 metal staples on the outside holding me together, not stitches, but metal staples to hold my intestines. My whole front was opened up, and you know, they had to take out part of my large intestine, my appendix, part of my small intestine when they did the operation. They're going to open me up again. Well, I had secreted into the hospital alfalfa, because from the health food business, I knew that alfalfa is the largest natural source of vitamin K, the clotting factor. That's why it's called K. It's got a German name, and it means that if you take large amounts of vitamin K, you have a better chance of, you know, of having your clotting capacity improved, which is what I needed badly. So I took a lot of alfalfa, and I prayed like hell. I prayed to God to help me so that I wouldn't have to go back on the operating table the next morning. And woke up the next morning, and the bleeding had stopped. It was a miracle. It was wonderful. So eventually, I got out of the hospital, but I was still sick. They guaranteed me that I would be back for another operation within 5 years, because everybody goes back, you know, of course, because, you know, they don't... I won't use the word cure. They don't get to the root of things, so that people can overcome this condition. So what happened was I was still, you know, my insides were not in good shape at all. I had all kinds of pain and problems, I wasn't able to put weight on. And to make a long story short, I found out that I was infested with parasites. I discovered that dental mercury was the cause of my two so-called incurable illnesses. I cleaned up the pathogens that were still trying to eat me up alive. I got the mercury out of my mouth by a biological dentist called Ara El Mayan on West Broadway. Great dentist who helped a lot of people. And I did chelation. I nearly croaked from DMPS, which was used in a dangerous way back in those days. Apparently, there's some practitioners who use it safely these days. Dr. Ziegert Strauss down in down in Surrey, put me through a lot of chelation, taught me a lot about it, in order to get the mercury out of the brain, out of the intestines, out of my organs and tissues. And within a short time, I was well on the road to recovery. There are other things which I have discovered. I live in Southeast Asia now. I've been in this part of the world for 10 years. And there are a lot of things that I discovered in Oriental medicine, because mercury suppresses the immune system. And I used to go to St. Paul's I asked my practitioner that, you know, I told him, my GP, that I had a suspicion that my immune system was still not strong. And I said, I want to get the same test as HIV people. He said, well, you know, it's an expensive test. They won't, they probably won't, we can't do that. You know, probably won't allow us to do that. I said, no, I want to get it done. I want to know. I want to get the numbers. I want to know what my immune system looks like, you know. So I used to get my my CD4, CD8 done there, and it was always around 600. And I couldn't get it up to, I mean, it's and it's not in the HIV area, which is, I don't know, I think below 200. I mean, really low numbers. You know, I mean, I was, you know, I was functioning and had an immune system, but it wasn't at the level that I would call a really strong, healthy level. And since I've been in Southeast Asia, I've discovered different forms of medicine over here, which have enabled me to get my immune system back up to normal. It's been it astonished me when I got the CD4, CD8 tests back that my immune system had recovered so dramatically. Mercury, even though I had done a lot of chelation to get the metals, my mercury levels were showing, my excretion levels were showing so low that I was doing myself more damage than anything else, because chelation also takes metals as well as mercury and other heavy metals and aluminum, the light metal, out of your body. And so basically I was depleting myself of minerals, and there was very little left in terms of toxic metals to get out of my system. So low mineral levels became a greater danger to me than high metal levels, which no longer had anymore. So it's at a certain point you got to stop doing chelation for this kind of thing. But there are certain therapies which I write about in my book, which are very useful for getting what I call residual mercury out of toxins out of your system, things which might not show up in a lab test as being significant, but yet are significant biochemically, physiologically, in terms of immune system suppression. So I discovered a lot in the last I finished chelation with Dr. Strouts in 95, 96, and I've done some DMSA on and off, just been in maintenance since then, very, very little. So in the last, since 96, in the last 15 years, I've done a lot of other research and discovered a lot of other things that are very, very helpful.
Well, for going back to what you just said, what kinds of medicine are you using, are you finding in Southeast Asia to help your immune system?
This is complex. I don't want to seem evasive, and to tell you the truth, I'm not out to promote my book. This is not why I'm doing the interview, but it will take a lot longer time than we've got here to discuss the modalities that I've been using and how to use them carefully and safely. That's why I wrote my recovery protocol. It's a 180-page book. So if I start to give details, it might it will be misleading for people because, like I write people who email me, I let them know. They say, "Oh, I decided it was this. I've done this or I'm trying that." I said, "Well, I'm sorry, but with all due respect, you're flying blind." And this is what happens. People have a good idea or a bad idea, and they chase after it, and they're really flying blind because they have really no idea, of the big picture. And so what I do in my book is I write about the big picture, and then I put the details into the picture in a way. That lets them know how and when they should do each stage and what they should expect, and also I give free follow-up for people. I've been accused of taking advantage of people. Well, I beg to differ. I don't believe that the cost of $24.95, which includes a $20 discount with free follow-up for as long as you need it, constitutes taking advantage of people. It's pretty sad. What I read, what other people have written on CureZone on their websites, in emails to me. To tell you the truth, I find it pathetic. So what I do is I help people as best I can. I make no medical guarantees or claims because that's against the law. I do my best to point people in directions where they can discover for themselves whether these things will work for them or won't, and I also always let them know that they should be doing this under the guidance of a competent medical practitioner who is familiar with this, competent with this, and who is experienced in these areas, because this is very, very important to do proper lab testing, to get back urine test results, to know how to interpret the results. And I help practitioners as well, some of whom are not up to speed, who may be misinterpreting a certain type of result. I help them understand, as I have learned through Dr. Strouts and a lot of other experience through the last 15 years. I help them understand what these numbers may mean, what they sometimes look like, but in fact might not really, the truth might not be what they really look like on the surface, because there might be other factors under the surface that are going on that they might not be aware of. You see, so it's a bit complex, and so I write these are the things that I write about in my book, and do follow up for people. So I'll talk about this in the sense of a detoxification. Getting to the root of the problem, finding practitioners who can help to safely remove mercury fillings from your mouth, getting to practitioners who can help you safely remove metals from your tissues and organs. DMSA happens to be an FDA-approved drug. It was approved by the FDA for chelating lead out of the brain of children who were lead poisoned. So this is not something that I talk about off the top of my head. It's not something that I am speculating about. It's not something I have invented. This is something that has been well known. This came out of, I believe, Germany back in the 1930s. And there's a quite extensive research which led to FDA approval, and which has led to the increasing use of DMSA and other chelators. There are other chelators available as well, which are might be recommended for certain people under certain sets of circumstances. So I write about the importance of detoxification, which takes the mystery out of things. If your doctor says you've got an incurable disease, we don't know the cause, we don't know the cure, you go home, you cry your eyes out, you say, I'm a dead man, right? But if your doctor says, look, open your mouth. Now, not one neurologist I have ever talked to, and I've talked to a lot of neurologists, ever said, open wide. Let's see what you got in there. Oh, look at that. You've got these silver colored. Ooh, look, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Ooh, three. You've got 8, you've got 10, you've got 12. Did you know they're 50% mercury? Wow, we better do something about that. You know, of course, this never happens. I write about this on my site. The most powerful neurotoxin on the planet is never ruled out as the cause of neurological illness. Well, isn't that a little strange? It is to me. And so what I did was I started to put one and one together, and you know what I came up with? I added one and one, and I got two.
Wow.
Now, that may astonish some people, but I don't think it should, because I think it's quite logical. And all I did was, I'm not the only one who's done this. I don't claim to be the only one in the universe who has come to this conclusion. There was a book called Beating Alzheimer's written by Tom Warren, and he overcame Alzheimer's disease. And of course, mercury poisoning, it was in the brain, could cause all kinds of mischief, and they give it a different disease name. And Tom Warren wrote a book about this, and it was based on mercury poisoning from dental fillings and getting detoxified and doing all this. So I'm not the only one, but I have been at it for 15 years, and one person can make a difference, and I'm trying to make a difference. That's basically what I do. And I never push people to buy any products. Basically, I sell the zapper and the foot pads, and for with the AC adapter and the handholds, and for
actually. The zapper, how does that come into play with your curing yourself?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the zapper comes into play because mercury and other metals and or chemicals create diseased areas in the body, and these disease areas attract parasites. They attract yeasts. Candida is very common. Put it this way, I haven't had it. I've had, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of cases of Candida come my way, you know, over the years, and people email me about Candida, and I ask, is there a history of silver amalgam fillings? In only 100% of the cases has the answer been yes. Candida attracts mercury. Mercury attracts candida. Mercury attracts parasites, all kinds of pathogens that love anaerobic and diseased tissue. And so the zapper comes in because there's a chain of pathology. The strength of the chain is created by metals and chemicals. In the vast majority of cases, there are cases where it is just a parasitic a problem, such as malaria, for example. It doesn't have to be any chemical or metal component to the illness. When we're talking about more serious complex cases, then the zapper comes in because these various pathogens are attracted to the chemicals and metals, and they have to be killed in order to break the what I call the chain of pathology. You deal with the underlying toxicity, and then you also deal with the pathogens that that are in this diseased tissue and diseased organs. And when you do that, then you can have some pretty astonishing results, and you can read about them on the in the testimonial archive on my site. Malaria is being dealt with very effectively with my zapper. I've had a medical doctor using my zapper in a country in Africa for a long time, and he has reported his protocol, and he has reported that within 6 days his patients come back malaria negative after using the ultimate zapper. So the zapper can be very, very effective in conditions that are exclusively related to pathogens without metals or chemicals being underlying causes. Warts fall off your hands. I mean, I had a wart years ago. I had a fellow come in to visit me years ago, and he has a lot of these big warts on his hands, and he says, I want to buy one of your zappers. A friend of mine loaned me one of yours, and my warts are falling off. He said, I want to finish the job, you know. So I said, oh, I've had this wart. I had it on my left index finger. I had this wart for years. I said, all right, well, I'll try it. And so I did it, and it didn't take too long. My wart was gone, never came back. And warts, of course, warts are viral. So there are things like people write about the cold and the flu bug and all kinds of other illnesses, other conditions which are, tapeworm, somebody's had a 2-foot tapeworm come out of them after using my zapper. People have seen, I have pictures on the, on my site, on the liver cleanse page of people zapping before the liver cleanse, and they do the liver cleanse, and then all of these little squirmy things come out of them. It's some people write me and they say, is this stuff going to come out of me? I'm scared of buying it. I said, no. I said, in most cases, these things are microscopic. The vast majority of people don't see anything. But if there is a serious case, of infestation, these things come out of people. They write me about them, and it's under the category parasites in the testimonial archive. And I am amazed, when I read these things, I say, holy moly, I can't believe it,
And how did you make the zapper? How did you create it to begin with?
That's a story which I write about. If you go down the homepage of my site is www.zap for Americans at ZAP .intergate. That's intergate.ca. Or you go, and there's no www in front of that, but I have a mirror site which does have a www in front of it, and it's called www.theultimatezapper.com. And if you go down the right-hand margin to near the bottom, you'll see how I invented the ultimate zapper, and the story is there. I won't repeat it now because it's also, very time-consuming thing that I cover in my writings.
Okay, perfect. I've got just three more questions. The first one is, there's a lot of therapies right now that are being pretty popular for multiple sclerosis. Have you heard of Dr. Paolo Zamboni and regeneration therapy? And
yep.
Even you were just talking about parasites, the helminthic therapy, where you put whipworms and hookworms into you, and that helps the autoimmune system. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because they're not really related to mercury.
I don't. Autoimmune. There's this thing about autoimmune disease This is a theory that is being made popular to convince people that their own tissues are attacking themselves. Well, healthy tissue does not attack itself. You don't wake up in the morning and all of a sudden you were healthy the day before and you have some tissue over here which has decided to attack tissue over there. What happens is that you have toxins inside the cells, And the body wants to rid the cells of those toxins. So the immune system is activated, and you have what is popularly called an autoimmune disease or an autoimmune reaction. Well, what's happening is essentially is that the body is trying to get rid of poison, and it's fighting. And it's doing this in different ways, and so the whole business of buying into the terminology and the theories that the medical system promotes regarding illness, I do not buy that. You see, if I had bought that, then I would have been dead a long, long time ago.
Okay.
You have to understand, in my hard copy book that I'm writing now, you have to understand about the medical system and how it works. The medical system is owned by the pharmaceutical companies. And it's not in their best interest to get to the bottom of things. It's in their best interest to sell their products. And so I have a very long chapter on the medical system, which explains to people various aspects of my thoughts and my opinions, my feelings, and my research about how it works. And when you understand that, then you can become informed and make informed decisions. And then when you hear people talking about something through the media or a clinic you go to, a doctor or friends or someone, you can see it in the perspective that I feel it should be seen in, which is a broader perspective. And you need to get very well informed in order to understand what you're up against. Because if not, put it this way, if I hadn't become informed, as I say, I would have been dead a long time ago. So information is power. You inform yourself, you know what's going on, and you know what you're up against, and you know what you have to do. And you become, in a sense, your own guide, your own practitioner. It's not that you don't need practitioners, but you need to know what kinds of practitioners and what kinds of help and therapies you need in order to get better. And the system will not guide you to overcoming something such as multiple sclerosis because they make too much money off of it. I read recently, I think I put it into one of my publications, somebody was rushing to market with a billion-dollar MS drug. I said, well, I can imagine they were lacing up their sneakers very quickly to rush to market with that kind of money to be made, you know?
Yeah. Like, what do you feel was the difference between you getting better than people that have also tried chelation therapy and some of these other treatments?
Well, you know, this is a very complex question. If you want to get better, you have to understand what the problem is, and then you have to do things on different levels. There is the physical plane that we're talking about now, and there's the mental plane, and there's a spiritual plane. And all of these have to come together. And they have to work together in order to create the fertile ground, physical and spiritual, for healing. And there are some people who have become too far ill on the physical plane, and it's extremely difficult to overcome when you have got to a certain, like what they call today, a tipping point, you know. But I don't say that I'm not going to say what kind of tipping point or what a tipping point is, because look at me, I came from paralysis, so was I past the tipping point? Obviously I wasn't. I was a basket case, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't it wasn't a foregone conclusion. So it depends on, you have to be very, very strong mentally, very strong spiritually. And even though your body may be a wreck, you have to be a strong person. You have to get to discover the different therapies that are important on the physical plane. You got to fight like hell. And by the grace of God, you know, you can do it. And I know many, many people who have done it, who have replicated my recovery. And if, you know, I say on my site, on the homepage, under the section called My Recovery Protocol, my recovery was not an accident. It wasn't an accident because other people have done the same thing. And Dr. Hal Huggins, he was a dentist in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I got to know him years ago. He's a very, very incredible person. And he was using mercury in his practice. He got multiple sclerosis, which I don't think he really has publicized. He wrote a book called It's All in Your Head. Of course, play on words. You know, the doctors tell patients it's all in your head. Well, it is, but it's in you. If you open wide, then you'll see what part of your head it's in, you know. So Dr. Huggins, he reversed his practice to biological dentistry, non-mercury dentist, and he opened an institute to help people with MS. Well, apparently he got 1,000 people to recover from MS. He was getting too popular, so they set him up for a fall, and they took his license to practice dentistry away. Anyway, he's down in Mexico now doing great work. So there are many people who have been able to recover and by doing the kinds of things that I'm talking about. So if my case had been unique, it would be valueless, because what's the point of something being unique, but if you pass it on to others, it doesn't have the same or it doesn't have the possibility of having a similar result. Well, then it's just anecdotal, as they say. It's a story. It's a freak, but this is not a freak case. You know, there are many cases. Percentage-wise, it's still a very, very small percentage of 1% of the people with MS who have been able to recover. So there's a lot of people out there with MS, and never mind, you know, Crohn's disease, but just talking about MS, there's a lot of people out there who can benefit from this kind of information, because there are a lot of people who have already recovered using this kind of information.
Perfect. Last question. Any last words of wisdom or thoughts on healings that you think might help other people?
Well, I would say to people who are seriously ill, as I was, never to lose hope. Never to lose faith. You pray to God for help every day. You know, of course, everyone knows the expression, God helps those who help themselves. Even if you have only prayer and only your mind and spirit, as was my case, you know, my body was, it wasn't worth talking about the condition that I was in for quite a long time. But with prayer and with positive affirmations, with positive visualizations, with strength of spirit and tenacity, it is possible to overcome serious illness. There is no guarantee. I make no medical guarantees. I make no medical claims. That would be totally irresponsible, because I would never want to be accused of giving anyone false hope. Someone who had, let's say, done the things that I had done and came back to me and said, look, I'm bitter because I did everything you told me to do and you lied to me, or you said you made this claim, or you used the word cure or whatever. I don't do that. I'm responsible. I know what people are up against. I know what I was up against. I know a lot of my friends have died. I know I was in the, you know, I visited the care center where people were dying with multiple sclerosis. I have a friend who died at the age of 32. I had another friend who died in her 60s, not from dental mercury, but from cadmium poisoning from working in an automobile factory in Europe for 10 years, and she developed MS from cadmium poisoning. It's not always dental mercury, as I mentioned before. So what I would say is, recovery is possible. There is no one who can guarantee that for you. On the other hand, if somebody says to you that you're incurable, well, you should walk away and say thank you very much. It's a pleasure meeting you.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, Ken. That was a great, I think you gave a lot of valuable information today.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to people. And if anyone wants to be in touch with me, I work 365 days a year. I haven't had a day off in over 10 years. And this is a labor of love for me. And people can email me at kenpresner@hotmail.com. kenpresner@hotmail.com. And I will be glad to answer any questions or concerns that people have. When I get a deluge of email, I work through it. Normally, I get about 50 email a day, and everybody gets an answer within 24 hours. So if anyone wants to email me, under normal circumstances, they can expect that they will hear from me within 24 hours.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Ken. That's great.